Meine lieben Zuhörer und Zuhörerinnen, hier ist das Freie Radio Stuttgart auf 99,2. Heute ganz besonders tolle Töne, ungewöhnliche Töne, mal nicht Sherman Blanket, aber sie sind richtig. Hier ist wieder die Lästerwelle mit Kabarett trifft. Und wir haben letztes Mal nicht zu viel versprochen. Wir haben gesagt, irgendjemand Tolles wird uns über den Weg laufen. Wir wissen noch nicht, wen wir als Überraschungsgast haben, aber es hat so sein müssen. Wir haben einen wunderbaren Menschen getroffen, einen Musiker, einen Native von Amerika. Es ist der Gutschild Aguilar. Der Gutschild Aguilar ist Musiker und gehört zu der siebten Generation, die berühmte, die jetzt wieder den Kampf aufnimmt um ihre Rechte in Amerika. Und dazu reist er hier durch Europa und macht Konzerte. Und den haben wir heute hergekriegt. Und deshalb möchten wir ihm die knappe Stunde ganz lassen, dass er erzählen kann über sein Projekt, wie er die Bisons versucht zu retten, wie er in Kooperation steht mit diesen Bison-Projekten in Polen und so weiter und so fort. Ich werde es nicht übersetzen. Sie müssen also gut lauschen. Wir werden aber die Sendung aufzeichnen und nächste Woche am 30. gibt es dann eine Sendung mit Übersetzung und die Woche drauf auch nochmal, weil wir haben auch einen Kollegen von ihm bereits interviewt, der gegen dieses Wasserdammprojekt ist, was wir jetzt schon hier alle hören. Also, konzentrieren Sie sich drauf. Es lohnt sich, dem Gutschild Aguilar zuzuhören, und Gutschild heißt gutes Schild. Und in diesem Sinne, viel Freude heute Abend. Ich werde mich, soweit es geht, zurückhalten.
Iuha chante waste, winapesi sapelo, emaki api wahanchaka waste, emaki api mato kangishka. Hello, everybody. My name is Gutschild Aguilar. I'm Oglala Lakota and also Sichangu Lakota from my father's side. And he's also French and Spanish. And on my mother's side, her tribe are called the Pascua Yaqui, but she's also Korra, related to the Yaqui, but she's also Irish and Spanish. And I have been traveling to Europe for the last 5 years studying the European buffalo, mainly because I work with the buffalo in North America and what's happening with the buffalo in Yellowstone, Montana. And I'm finding that at one time, there were millions of buffalo, which in Germany they call the Wiesent. And there were millions between Italy and Russia, and you can find evidence of them in the cave art in the 300 caves that have been found. Most of them are in France. Some of them are in Spain, Romania, Germany, Slovenia. And in these caves, there's 30,000, some 40,000 year old paintings of buffalo on the walls. So I'm trying to, I call myself a buffalo ambassador. So I'm working with trying to connect the two buffalo cultures together, because I feel like culture is a very important thing. And in Europe, you know, for thousands of years, I feel people have been disconnected from the ties to the earth, you know, especially with nature. And in North America, you know, it wasn't very long ago where native people were very connected with nature. So for us, it's still very much in our memories. But I feel like people in Europe, you know, I'm finding that many people don't even know that there was European buffalo. So my work is to, as a buffalo ambassador, is to connect all people on the planet with culture, with nature, and more importantly, to make sure that the North American and European buffalo still exist for many generations to come.
So you have to take us on your hand and to teach us to get the connection to the nature back. Thank you very much for that.
Oh yeah, you're very welcome. Yeah, one of my favorite places to go is in Poland. It's a place called Białowieża, and it's one of the last ancient forests left in Western Europe. It's also the place where they took the last 12 European buffalo in 1920. There's only 12 left. So through many, many good people who were trying to preserve nature, they were able to preserve these European buffalo, and right now there's maybe about 8,000. Only about 4,000 are wild. The other ones they take to breeding facilities because they don't want the genetics to become too much inbred. Mm-hmm. So they actually keep a family tree for every single European buffalo. Mm-hmm. So even in the wild, they'll still have a tag on their ear because they try to keep track of the genetics. Mm-hmm. But it's been a great honor to work with many, many nature conservationists in Europe, and, you know, just to learn the story of the European buffalo. It gives me hope, because in North America, there is only about 300 left, you know, in 1880. And at one time we had about 60 million. So in less than 10 years, you know, they were killed from 60 million down to 300. It's pretty shocking.
Between what time?
Between 1860, really, to 1880, that's when most of the buffalo were killed.
Just 20 years.
Yeah, even less than that.
Poo, we are cruel.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, in this time of the seventh generation coming around, we're still reminding people that we are still here. You know, we are, most of us are mixed blood, like myself, you know, and I feel that's very important, because it is part of our seventh generation prophecy too. Because like Chief Black Elk had a vision of a rainbow tribe bringing back, you know, the old ways, the old ceremonies, the old songs, also making the earth green again. And so Chief Black Elk, for me, he's actually my great, great, great uncle. So I'm a direct descendant of Black Elk, but I feel very much, when I travel to Europe, I think about him a lot, because he did come to Europe with Buffalo Bill's traveling Wild West show. Mm-hmm. So actually there's many, many North American buffalo in Europe as well. And there 60 of them were left by Buffalo Bill. And those are the descendants of the ones in North America, from North America, are the descendants of, you know, those original 60 that Buffalo Bill left. But Black Elk very much felt, he felt loved more by European people, ironically, than he did by, you know, the colonizers coming mm-hmm. to America, mm-hmm. which was very ironic. I heard he almost got married to an English woman and almost stayed, but he got really sick. And in that sickness, he had this vision where it told him that he needed to go back to his people because they really needed him. So yeah, I think about him a lot as I'm walking down the streets of Germany and Poland and France and Switzerland.
Good. And can you tell just from the bisons in America about that sad story and how it works till now?
You mean with the Buffalo Project?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, so there was only 300 left in, you know, almost 1880. It was probably like 1878. There was only 23 in the North and about 200 and something, 280 in the South. Unfortunately for the ones in the South, this cattle rancher mixed the genetics of a cow with a buffalo, which created what we call a beefalo. So in the country of in the United States, we have about 600,000 buffalo, but only 10% or less are genetically pure buffalo. So the other 90% are descendants of that southern herd that got mixed with the cattle genes.
Mm-hmm.
So they are beefalo, but the only ones that are still truly wild and still genetically pure are the ones in Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
So those last 23 were protected by Teddy Roosevelt, who was the president at that time, and he created the first national park in Yellowstone in America, and he called it Yellowstone National Park. So originally, Yellowstone National Park was set up to protect the last 23 buffalo, and then eventually they started to protect the grizzly bears and, you know, the mm-hmm. wolves, the moose, all the wildlife out there. In 1970, those 23 got up to about 7,000. And unfortunately, there's cattle ranchers around the area of Yellowstone. During the Great Depression in the U.S., the government allowed these cattle ranchers to bring cows in, and for $1.80, they could have two cows grazing on public land. It's actually illegal to graze livestock outside of national park boundaries, but they only allowed this because they wanted the economy to get better. So they created something called subsidized cattle grazing, and it's a welfare program set up for cattle ranchers so that they can have cheap grass for their cows. So the reason that the buffalo right now are being killed in Yellowstone, it's not because of this disease that the cattle industry claims that the buffalo can give to the cows. This disease is called brucellosis. It's actually a cow disease. These cows have given this disease to much of the wildlife. There's elk out there, there's deer, there's, you know, all kinds of wildlife.
So do you think that disease wouldn't happen without all the cows?
Well, it is a cow disease. Uh-huh. It did come over from Europe. And so right now, 60% of the elk do have the disease. The buffalo have never given this disease to cows ever. They are not in the same place at the same time. So the buffalo come in, they leave the park and come down to where it's easier to get to the grass. They have their babies, and then they go back into the park, and then the cattle are brought out into Yellowstone, or not in Yellowstone, but on the public land surrounding Yellowstone. So really, the reason the buffalo are being killed, it's because of the grass. The cattle ranchers don't want the buffalo to eat the grass. So right now, over 8,000 buffalo in the last 20 years have been killed because of the cattle ranchers wanting this grass for their cows. So the disease really isn't even an issue because
it's not a reason.
No, it's really about the grass.
Like always.
And these cattle ranchers actually are still paying $1.80. You know, this is like 80, almost 90 years later since they started this this grazing program, and the taxpayers of the state of Montana pay $5 million a year to pay for the rest of the bill that these cattle ranchers should be paying. If they were to pay the full price, it would be around $20 for one cow. So buffalo aren't the only animals suffering from this subsidized cattle grazing program. Also, the wild horses in Wyoming, thousands have been killed for the same reason. These cattle ranchers don't want horses eating the grass. They just want that grass for their cows. And it's kind of an epidemic, actually. You know, these subsidized cattle grazing programs in the United States, thousands of wolves have been killed for the same reason. The cattle ranchers claim, oh, they might eat our livestock or whatever. And it's extremely rare that a predator ever gets a cow. So that's something that really needs to change. We need to take away the funding that these cattle ranchers get from the government. So, you know, if they didn't get this tax money that we pay every year so that they could have cheap grass, they would have to either move their cows somewhere else or just do something else. Yep. But really, the cattle industry is not a big part of the industry at all. So it's only serving, I think it's 7 different cattle companies, which are very small.
And what aim do you have with your project now to protect the buffaloes?
Well, we just want the buffalo to be protected just like all the rest of the wildlife. You know, the grizzly bears are protected. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the wolves are and sometimes they're not. That depends on when the government of Montana decides that there's too many wolves. Right now they're trying to say there's too many grizzly bears. So they're trying to, they call it delisting. It's when they get taken off the endangered species list. So I know a couple grizzlies have been killed already in certain areas. Not really in Yellowstone, but in Teton National Park, which is the next national park over. They can't hunt them inside the park, which is good. So as long as buffalo and grizzly bears and wolves stay inside the park, they are safe. But in our work, we are a media organization. So we do videotape everything that happens whenever buffalo are harassed or killed or chased. We videotape it. And then mm-hmm. I travel around the world and show people what's happening out there. But we do have video footage of them using helicopters to chase them out of the park mm-hmm. to where they can get to them.
You showed it on the film I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but this happens in the wintertime when there's nobody out there to see what's happening. So, one thing about our organization is anybody can come out and volunteer.
Also here from Germany.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had,
they are welcome.
Very much. Very much. We had a young German man named Moritz come out last winter. We've had people from 50 different countries come out to the Buffalo Field Campaign. You know, Israel, New Zealand, all over South America, France.
And how can they help?
Well, we have our website and it tells people different things they can do. We have petitions that people can sign. You can write letters to the National Parks Department and the State Department saying, because I think like 60% of the people that come to Yellowstone as tourists are actually from out of the country. Mm-hmm. So if you write letters saying that we are boycotting your park, mm-hmm. you know, we won't ever come to your park because of what you're doing to the
wildlife.
They
will feel it.
Yes, very much. And because of these letters, we've had a few years where we stopped, like no buffalo were hunted or killed, but that it's not always the case, unfortunately. I think this has only happened for 3 years before. We were able to stop the helicopters from being used for 2 years because in our video footage, we captured a grizzly bear being stuck in one of these we call them hazing programs. Hazing is when you chase something from where it wants to be mm-hmm. to where you want it, to where these cattle ranchers want it to be.
That you can catch them and kill them.
Yeah. But we captured a grizzly bear getting stuck and almost trampled by buffalo. And because grizzly bears are protected, we were able to stop the helicopters for 2 years. Unfortunately, with all activism, especially with environmental issues, it's like you take two steps forward and one step back, you know. But we did have two victories recently. We did, after 18 years of trying, we finally got the buffalo to be the national mammal of the United States, mm-hmm. much like the eagle is our national bird, mm-hmm. Which is really good. It brought a lot of attention. However, it does not protect the Yellowstone buffalo yet. You know, we are still working on that. Another victory we got is there's this area outside of the park, which is on one of these public land areas where they used to graze cattle. They don't bring cattle there anymore, luckily. And part of the reason is because some of the cattle ranchers in that area sold, because like I said, the cattle industry isn't very big in Montana. So some cattle ranchers, the smaller ones, weren't really making any money. So these cattle ranchers near this place called Horse Butte sold the land. So now it's a buffalo safe zone because of the people who did buy it. So, which means the buffalo can cross that area into this other area called Horse Butte. So they're safe there. It's a safe zone.
That's good.
It's not a very big area, but it's something, you know, and it just happens
like
to be
big road.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just happens to be their favorite place to have their babies. So these are two victories we had, but they plan on, killing 1,000 this winter. So we need a lot of volunteers out there to be witness, to help us video document what's happening out there.
And is there no chance to stop that they are killing them?
I think the more people that know about it, the more of a chance we have. Mm-hmm. Because even though I've been traveling 16 years, educating people about it, there's still many people that have no idea this is happening.
Yes. So, we hear nothing in our medias.
Yeah. So the first year we did a 6-week tour of the West Coast of the United States. That following winter, because of all the attention that we brought to it, because the winter before that, 1,100 buffalo were killed. And that's the most buffalo that have ever been killed after they were, you know, after the 1800s. So in the 1900s, that was the most that have ever been killed. So we did a 6-week tour. We spoke to many different colleges, different venues, radio stations, and we had so many people call in to the capital of Montana, which is Helena, that we shut down their system for 3 days because there were so many people calling, so many people emailing. So that winter, no buffalo were killed. So that proves that, you know, the more people that know about it and react in mm-hmm. a progressive way, you know, mm-hmm. we can stop this. But in this day and age, with so many crazy things that we see happening on TV, you know, I understand it's hard to fight all the good fights. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's hard to like pick one thing that you can stick to because there's so much that we're, yeah, I mean, everybody's talking about Trump, you know, like to me, that's a weapon of mass distraction, you know, like what Trump's doing over here, they want us to look over here because they're doing other things behind our backs that, you know, we usually find out when it's too late. So it's, yeah, it's hard to stay focused on one thing, but for me, buffalo are my passion. So this is, I choose not to get into American politics and any of that. You know, the buffalo are very important to me, and also food sovereignty, you know, like Monsanto and GMOs, because the main reason I got into buffalo preservation was because so many of our people have diabetes, and it's because we're not eating our traditional food that mm-hmm. we have eaten for mm-hmm. thousands of years.
Yeah.
So that was the one thing that really got me, you know, directed towards buffalo. But also the fact that my aunt Rosalie Little Thunder was the co-founder of the organization. So when I met her in 2000, she really inspired me to get more involved. So I choose to help the four-legged beings, which because they are a keystone species, which means when the buffalo thrive, so does the grass, so does the trees, so do the bugs, the birds, everything. You know, they are kind of on top as far as the being a keystone species and they're very important to the ecosystem, because if there's no buffalo, everything suffers, you know, not just my culture or my people. And
you really told us now in just some minutes more than we really got from our medias in the last 20 cent.
Oh yeah.
Yes. So may we hear another song from you, if you like?
Yes, I'd like to...
Have you forgotten something?
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah? I actually was hoping to sing a drum song. Mm-hmm. So usually when I'm traveling, I will start out with a drum song and I'll tell a traditional story and, you know, talk about why buffalo are important to my culture. And then I usually show a film and then answer questions afterwards. And then these films aren't very easy to watch, so I like to end it with music, you know, try to end it with some positive music. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to sing a welcoming song right now. So this is to welcome all the people listening out there, to just sharing a little culture with you all from Turtle Island, also known as the United States, but we prefer Turtle Island. I think maybe I could play a song from the CD.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two. This is actually the day after I met my Aunt Rosalie Little Thunder and I watched her buffalo film. I wrote this song called Red Road Home. And it was originally inspired by seeing the buffalo's struggle happening right now. So yeah, this is a very special song to me because it planted that seed for my music project called Seventh Generation Rise. So this is called Red Road Home.
Sie können sich was zum Schreiben holen. Ich gebe nachher noch eine Adresse durch, wie Sie Kontakt bekommen können und dann das Projekt unterstützen.
Yeah. Negro Nation has brought the message. The buffalo are coming back. Our people are coming back.
Hello again. So that was a song called Red Road Home. I wrote it back in 2000. And it's dedicated to the buffalo in Yellowstone. I got to meet a lot of people at the film festival this last weekend. And one of them was Michael Smith. If you're listening out there, I just wanted to say, hey, how's it going?
Hallo, Mike. Wir haben dich nicht vergessen. We didn't forget you.
So I've had many people influence my cultural resurgence, I guess, because even though I embrace my Lakota culture, I grew up in California, which isn't traditional Lakota territory. So it wasn't until I was a teenager that I started to go back to South Dakota. But really working with a man named Floyd Redco Westerman really inspired me and motivated me, and I played the bass for him for about 8 years till he passed away in 2007. I'd like to play a song by him right now.
Be great, because in Germany a lot of people know Floyd Westerman.
Yeah.
He has a lot of fans in Germany from the 70s, still from that time. Mm-hmm. We played his songs a lot. And we are still fans of him.
Nice.
It's nice to hear a song from you who knows Floyd Westerman personally.
This is a song he wrote called Going Back. And I can relate to this because I had to go back home myself to get reconnected.
Back to the crime that I must find. Leave me alone. Can't you see I'm going home? Well, can't you see I'm going home?
I'm sure Floyd was listening. He's here now. Ah, oh, he is here. He's proud of you.
Yeah, he was a funny, funny man. I loved working with him as long as I did. And I actually do tribute concerts for him in the U.S. Once in a great while, not very often, but I at least play one or two of his songs whenever I play anywhere, though. But
it's important. Yeah. So he is not dead. He's still alive.
Yeah, very much.
And us.
Should I play another song? Or?
You may do it. It's your
okay.
Gig here.
So I traveled to Peru back in 1999. And, you know, that's actually when I became aware of indigenous people's issues down in South America. You know, I started to wake up around that time. I think I was 19. And when I returned, I wrote this song and I chose to write it in Spanish. And it's called Sangre y Oro, which means blood and gold. And yeah, this is it.
Sun.
We want to have more of that music the next hours.
Yeah, that was I wrote that in Spanish. I was learning about what happened in South America, you know, so I felt motivated to kind of write the story of you know, we're actually taught in school that Columbus was just a humble merchant, a humble sailor who wanted to find a new path to the Orient to find silk and spices. That was the farthest from the truth you could ever get. He was actually a slave trader for a very long time. He used to sail down to Africa, and he had an island off the coast of Portugal where he would take different slaves and he would literally breed them for their genetics. He would breed the biggest, the strongest, and by doing this, he removed their cultural identity, because pretty soon there was these mixed people, you know, and anyway, he did this for a very long time before he approached the people in Italy, the Vatican, and he asked the Vatican if they would fund his trip. And this was in 1491. At that time, though, the Vatican was telling people that the world was flat. If you wandered too far, you would fall off the edge of the world. But the Vatican very much knew that the world was round, you know, just like a lot of ancient cultures before people of that time knew the world was round, just like the stars are round, the moon is round, the planets are round. But they used, at that time, religion was a way to control people, and by using fear especially. So they told Columbus, no, we're not going to fund you, you know, and his name is Cristobal Colombo. In Latin, that means Christ-bearing conqueror. Cristobal is a Christ-bearer. Colombo is to conquer or to colonize. So he approached the king of Spain, and he asked if he would fund his trip because he knew of this new world. And the king of Spain said, well, if you bring us gold and slaves, we will fund your trip. So Columbus said, yeah, okay. So he sailed off, and in October 10th, 1492, he landed in the Caribbean, and the first people he encountered were the Arawak people, which are related very much to the Aztec people. Also, the people on the next island were the Taino people. And when Columbus landed, you could actually read in his diaries that he came across these people who were living in perfect harmony, and they were just living with the land and everything, and they were living with God, with and in God, which in Latin, en Dios, that's the word he chose to call these people. They were in God, en Dios. So that's where that word indios comes from. You know, it's not because he got lost and thought he found India, because at that time India was not called India, it was called Hindustan. And to this day, many people choose to call it Hindustan, but it wasn't called India until like the late, I think, 1700s, early 1800s. So when Columbus went back to Spain, he wasn't given everything he was promised. Another Spanish sailor sailed out and followed the exact route that Columbus did, and his name was Cortez. And so he raped and pillaged the Caribbean, and eventually in 1601 or 1501 made it over to Mexico. And by that time, it was complete genocide and chaos. And so we're not called Indians because Columbus thought he found India. We're called Indians because we are in God, in Dios. And so, you know, history I think history is constantly being rewritten. And this is something that Floyd taught me, you know, working with Floyd Westerman. There's a lot of things like science and just all these things that, you know, we're having to relearn. We're having to retrace our footsteps. So part of my journey through Europe is I'm tracing the footsteps of the European buffalo. Because, like I mentioned earlier, I am part European. You know, my great-great-grandma was a red-headed, green-eyed French woman. you know, and her husband was a Spaniard, and eventually they, I guess they went to Mexico, and then eventually their kids came up to California and then over to South Dakota. And that's how, you know, my dad was conceived, and then he moved back to California and met my mom. So we're all, I'm finding that out actually studying European history. Like when I'm traveling through France and I say I'm part French, they just laugh at me and they say, "What's French? There's been so many different civilizations coming through here. There is no like French, you know?" So it's the same with North America, you know, it's even our tribes mixed around. And then today's day, you know, a lot of European people have mixed with Native people. And I think it's a beautiful thing. You know, I wouldn't be the person I am today if I wasn't mixed, you know, I think we're all part of this prophecy of the rainbow tribes rising up. I do study Hopi prophecies. So part of their prophecy is when the earth is ravaged and the animals are dying, there will be a new tribe of people born upon this earth from many colors, creeds, and classes. And by their actions and deeds, they shall make the earth green once again, and they shall be known as the warriors of the rainbow. And Black Elk himself had this very similar vision. He had this vision of this big rainbow around the world. And he saw this big tree coming up, and he calls it the flowering tree. And then he also saw many, many buffalo. As soon as that tree grows out of the ground, the buffalo start to come back. And he felt that this particular tree and the buffalo are medicine to the earth. He felt that when these things returned, the sacred hoop would be complete again. So I feel like he was very much feeling what Hopi prophecy was talking about, you know, thousands of years ago, which we're just now starting to be interested in, you know. So, I could keep talking forever, but...
the time is running.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just running. It's so fascinating what you have to tell us. That's why you are here. So you may play another song?
Yes, yeah. So this song, I'd like to dedicate this to my European roots. And also, you know, I did write this song for my mom, thinking about her, because she grew up Catholic. She tried to make me Catholic, but for me, you know, no offense to Catholics, but it didn't work with me, you know, like what my heart was telling me. Like, I feel like Lakota is a very special thing, and there's only one Lakota, you know, like Lakotas don't go around and tell people you should live this way. You know, we knew what was right for us. And I think spirituality as a whole is important. So if that works for you, I totally respect that, you know, like that's like, I think people definitely need to return to a place of spirituality. And so this song is dedicated to my mom, because when she started to see me take part in cultural events and ceremonies, it made her come back to her own roots. And I feel like, you know, people in Germany in particular who come out to the U.S., they feel a connection to Buffalo and they want to be connected. And I feel like a part of them might remember, but they don't exactly know why or how. So this is a song called Remember Who You Are.
If I've learned it.
Das war Uncle Child Aguilar. Wir müssen ganz kurz und ganz schnell uns verabschieden. Wir und Sie können vor allen Dingen nächste Woche am 30. Januar von 19 bis 21 Uhr und am 6. Februar von 19 bis 21 Uhr noch einmal und eventuell noch mehr von ihm hören, wenn er uns noch im Studio nebenan was einspielt und vor allen Dingen dann auch von dem Mike Smith und dann auch auf Deutsch übersetzt. Wer ganz eilig ihn mit unterstützen will, ich sag geschwind noch www.buffalo schreibt man Field F-I-E-L-D Campaign mit C campaign.org. Ich tue alles nächste und übernächste Woche nochmal wiederholen. Wir haben noch ein paar Minuten. Maybe you would like to say bye to our audiences.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening out there. And I hope I taught people something today that they didn't know before.
You did.
That's part of my work.
You did.
I guess I'll end with the drum song. Let's see. I'll sing a song. This is a charge song.
Yeah.
Whoa, Pilar.
5 seconds.
Thank you very much. Buffalofieldcampaign.org. Please check out our website.